You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown podcast presented by MassLive. I'm the host, Chris Cotillo, joined once again by my co-beat writer, Chris Smith, and it's halfway through spring training, so we thought we'd come to you with just some thoughts on what we've seen so far from the Red Sox. Unfortunately, neither of us are down in Florida, which is kind of obvious during everything that's going on, but from afar, definitely have some observations we want to get into. So, Chris, give me your big picture just to start out. What have you thought of what you've seen through, seven or eight Grapefruit League games at this point and workouts before then and what we've heard from the guys?
I'm always optimistic at this time of year. So I think I saw you mention to Jim the other day that, you thought an 88 win team could be, now your expectations are down to 85. I was on another podcast the other day, and I said that they could be an 85 to 90 win team. Now, as I said, I'm very optimistic usually around this time, but
yeah.
I like what I'm seeing in terms of, minus Garrett Richards. What I'm seeing with some of the additions they made starting pitching wise, or pitching wise in general, Garrett Whitlock is an interesting guy. He's looked really good. I think that could be a really big steal from the Yankees, who have struggled to develop pitching anyway. And if one of their guys that they did develop ends up the Red Sox because they didn't protect him, that's, that will be a pretty big steal.
That's a good plug for the last episode of this podcast, by the way, too.
Yeah, and, Connor Siebold. I think that he could, his stuff, he could actually have as much of an impact as Pivetta later in the year. Now, I think Nick is going to be good. I like what I see him with him stuff. He's really confident, too. He spoke after the game yesterday, Pivetta, and he was, talking about how, he thinks he's as good as anybody, and his stuff shows that, his curveball's really sharp. He was saying his curveball wasn't good. And Cora comes out after the game and says his curveball's sharp. He's got the spin rate on all these pitches, and he could definitely be a really good number five starter. So I'm optimistic about the rotation. And I think that if certain people struggle, they have other people like Connor Siebold in the minor leagues who that will protect Whitlock. Yeah. That will protect them as opposed to last year when, if one guy stunk, they had to go to a reliever.
Right. So that's where I was actually going to start. I didn't even tell you that before, but, the rotation, I think this team's going to go where the rotation goes. I think there's only a couple guys in the rotation we've seen, Valdi has been, and Martin Perez, nothing much has changed for them since the end of last year, but the three guys that I think we are monitoring in camp, Pivetta, who you talked about, who's been pretty impressive, Garrett Richards, who you mentioned, and Eduardo Rodriguez. So I think the two biggest storylines rotation-wise have been, Rodriguez looking good in that three-inning start. I believe he's going tomorrow or Thursday, four innings. And then Garrett Richards, struggling with the walk, struggling with command, struggling with mechanics. So I think, generally super encouraging from Erod there and a little bit worrisome from Richards, but not ready to write him off quite yet. Let's wait till April for that one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, this is a time, spring training is a time to, to get your mechanics down and everything. And he's a tall guy. I think Sean McAdam had brought that up to in post game one of these starts, and you've seen that with a lot of guys that have trouble getting their mechanics right away when they're tall. Andrew Miller was that type of guy who had to take spring training. So I mean, look at, he's got good stuff. He was, he was a really, he was a good starter last year in a limited sample size. The one thing that's interesting that I've read though is, Alex Speer talking to a scout wrote in one of his articles that like the scout feels like maybe at this point he is a reliever. But that was during the off season after they signed him. So, I think that they're banking on like, or not banking on it, but they're hoping like Pivetta or Richards will probably, could turn into a Morton signing, like what the Rays got with him.
And that, I think that that's, they hope one of those guys turns into something. And then if one of them doesn't, moving to either one of them to the bullpen and bringing up Houck is totally reasonable too. I think more likely with Richards that happening than Pivetta later in the year, just because, they have Pivetta for a while. They want to try to keep developing him as a starter. And he's talked about, part of the reason things fizzled out in Philly for him is because they were using him in the bullpen and he hated it. So I think they'll have a longer leash on that one. But with Richards only, under control for a year, a year and an option, I think it's more possible that he'll be moved to the bullpen. That's where I want to go next. I think we talked a lot on this show and, in our writing and just, even Slack about how much rotation depth they have and all the guys that they have. And I think, the bullpen quietly is, not that bad of a mix. And so I want to get to really, I think, probably the number one storyline in terms of roster stuff this spring is the closer competition. I wrote the other day, my predictions, Ottavino gets it actually over Barnes. I know our friend Ian Brown keeps tweeting that Barnes is the clear favorite there. Seems like Salamira is not going to get the chance. Darwinson's not going to get the chance. Brazier is probably not even going to be ready for opening day at this point after missing a few days of camp early. So assuming it is a two-horse race and an hour after we record this, Ottavino is going to pitch for the first time in a game. But where do you see that stacking up? Are you in the Ottavino camp with me? Are you in the Barnes camp? Or where do you see that going?
Yeah, I could see either one. And, I mean, you look at it and things could change quickly, even if they pick one guy at the beginning of the year and he struggles, the other guy could take it over quickly. I'm fine with either one of them. I've never been a huge fan of Matt Barnes in the closer role. I think that he struggles a lot against, quality teams, quality hitters. I mean, his numbers against the Yankees and Houston are not good. If you look at those splits against, worse teams, I guess that makes sense because, good hitters hit. But still, I mean, it doesn't seem like obviously, when you look at the numbers, he doesn't have good numbers. And when he goes into like places like Yankee Stadium and Minute Maid and stuff like that. Yeah. So, there's a concern there. I think Ottavino will have a good year. I think that Cora and everybody is banking on it. Him turning around, as Cora said today, it was only really one bad inning. Maybe it was a couple bad innings for Ottavino last year, but
one really bad one against Toronto, I know. Six runs,
yeah,
and no outs.
Yeah,
something like
one
that.
Really bad one. Yeah. I mean, there was only a couple of bad outings for him last year. Really pitched well. If you erase that Toronto outing, I think his ERA was in the threes, but his FIP was in the threes anyway. And, a lot of the peripheral numbers looked good with him. The certain, spin rate and all that stuff, they were all the same as previous years, all velocity and stuff. And so, I think that, movement on his pitches. So, I think either one of them could do it. I think that, I don't know. Yeah, you're probably right about Ottavino. I don't know how comfortable they are with Barnes.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
And if neither one of them work out, I think that there's a legitimate chance that, Salamara, once he comes up, once he's comfortable and if he pitches well, he's the guy who has, I think 75 saves in Japan and, they could easily switch to him. He's not going to get it out of the gate, but I think he's also a candidate. If you were to say who's going to lead the team in saves by the end of the year, I think all three of those guys are in the mix, really.
And Bizzardo. No.
Yeah.
I love Bizzardo.
Edward Bizzardo defender Chris Smith here with us today.
No, but it's interesting. Like the best closer year in Red Sox history, you could argue, was Koji Uehara's 2013. And what was he like, the third, fourth person that they went to that year?
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, things can change and, you know, they have multiple guys that could do it. And I think you're right about Sarah Moore.
Even 2 years ago, Workman barely made the team and was a lights out closer.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, things change. And, you know, as I said, another guy, Darwinson Hernandez, mm-hmm. you know, you look at his stats and I mean, he's walked a lot of guys, but he really hasn't given up like or any hits really is his time as a reliever. He's, you know, so, you know, he's a guy that could do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's multiple guys. So if one of these guys gets it and it doesn't work, they have people to fall back on.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's a decision that it's going to be a headline. It's going to be something we talk about. We talked about Cora today and the day before and Sunday because Barnes pitched and all that stuff. But it's a fluid situation. If it doesn't work out, they actually have options, which obviously they didn't a year ago. We'll get to, I think, the other big roster question is the bench. I think that's changed a little in the last couple of days because, you know, Frankie Cordero is not ready for the season. Then there's probably going to be two bench spots available with how they're going to align it. And there's now more competition. Danny Santana signed to a minor league deal over the weekend. He joins really Michael Chavis, Christian Arroyo. And I think a guy who's worked himself into the conversation, like we were talking about, you know, before we started rolling here, Jairo Munoz. And he's had a great spring. Chavis has looked good. And Danny Santana, as I have said and have written, that I think he has the upper hand because he's a left-handed hitter. But it seems like it's going to be those four guys for one or two spots, depending on Franchi's situation. He's still not clear to work out with the team. To me, I think, you know, as he just admitted in his media conference a couple hours ago, Michael Chavis doesn't seem like he has much of a chance to make it. Christian Arroyo, out of options, I think they're going to try to get him on the roster. And Danny Santana, if he's healthy, I think probably has an edge there too. But Munoz has talked his way into the conversation. And I think that this is kind of between those three guys for either one spot or two spots. You know, it's pretty wide open. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. I'm not sure if, you know, Danny Santana will be healthy, you know, at the beginning, or not healthy, but ready to go on opening day. Mm-hmm. I mean, he might need to spend a couple of weeks at the alternate training site because of that shoulder. So, yeah, I mean, I've always liked Jairo Munoz since they got him. I thought that was a good pickup. The kid can hit. He's an aggressive hitter, bat to ball type of guy. And, you know, he's, you know, in a day and age where a lot of people strike out and homer, you know, he's a guy that swings early and makes contact and he's a good hitter. And so I like that option. But, you know, Santana is an interesting guy, obviously, because he had so much power in 2019, 28 home runs. And he was the Rangers MVP that year. So that's a good signing right there. And, you know,
for a minor league deal.
Yeah, it's just the way that Alex Cora talks about it. They obviously look at him as a guy that's, you know, could be an important part of their roster when he's healthy or when he's ready to go. So, yeah, I could see any of them. I think Chavis is on the outside looking in right now. He's like a bubble team in the NCAA tournament.
Yep, like yours.
What's that?
Like Syracuse.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. So they have to win. So, you know, but he has had a pretty good spring training, but the concern with him still is like, you know, he just hasn't fixed things in his swing, you know, like there's just been continuous problems beyond the first, you know, month and a half he was as a rookie with the Red Sox. You know, there's been holes in his swing, up in the zone, fastballs up in the zone, and, you know, striking out too much. And if you're going to strike out that much, you know, that's not a problem. Dalbach's going to strike out this year a ton, but he's the type of guy that's probably going to provide 30 home run power too. Chavis didn't provide enough power, you know, in the last year and a half to justify the strikeouts.
And I think it was really interesting, you know, obviously the headline that is getting attention and that I just wrote before we put it up is, you know, him saying, I'm not sure I have a place in the team. It's obviously an awkward situation, but I think, you know, an interesting piece of that conference too was, he said that the Red Sox have not talked to him one time about playing the outfield. And considering that that is a place where people think, you know, this outfield of Renfro, Verdugo, Franchi, and some Marwin is pretty light. The fact that they're not even considering him there is kind of telling on how they feel about him, I think.
Yeah. My opinion is that, you know, he doesn't have much value right now because of the last, you know, year and a half that he's played for the Red Sox, and that their goal is to just, you know, see him at the alternate site. Maybe, you know, maybe he starts hitting, you know, once minor league games begin, and they can either trade him, or maybe he develops what, you know, what he's struggling, he develops in those areas as a hitter, and then he comes back. This is a problem that, like, you know, from the Dave Dombrowski era, I think they rushed some guys up. I think Davis was one of those guys they rushed up.
In April 19, they had, I think, Holt, Nunez, and someone else all got hurt in the first 2 weeks of the season. Yeah. And then when Davis came up, he was hot. So
I guess that's, you know, that they had to rush him up. But, you know, I mean, there's other guys that I think would have benefited from more time in the minor leagues. And, you know, you look at Mancata and Benintendi, and those guys would have benefited for some more time in the minor leagues. And I think that, you know, Bloom's going to take that approach where he's going to, you know, have Duran in the minor leagues for as long as it takes for him to be comfortable. And maybe Chavis goes back to the minor leagues and, you know, he does, you know, he finds something and he works on stuff. And, you know, he gets to be that first round talent that they thought they had there in the first 2 months of his rookie year.
Mm-hmm. That's, you mentioned Duran, that was, you know, where I was going next, kind of a broader outfield question, but I just feel like it's tough to project when Duran's going to make the team because we don't really have that history of, you know, obviously Bloom brought up Dahlbeck, but I think it was generally assumed that he was going to be ready. And once they traded Marlon, then there's a clean fit and all that. And Houck made his debut. And so we saw a couple guys coming up, you know, last year, but with Duran, he's checking every box at every place they put him, you know, whether it's, he's, you know, very good in Major League spring training last year, which seems like about 10 years ago. He was like the star of the alternate site, right? And then the Caribbean series, he was balling out, and now in big league camp, you know, he's not just doing the things that we know he can do well, but he's also hitting homers and he's, you know, impressing pretty much every day in these games. And he's been kind of the guy we've been talking about the most and writing about a lot. As you texted me the other day, that he's the storyline everybody's talking about and everybody wants to read. So at the same time, I think there's about a 0% chance he'll make the opening day roster. And I would guess that, you know, if he gets called up, it's sometime in July or August. So, you know about kind of these prospects more than I do. So what does he need to do? And when is the earliest you think we could see him up?
Yeah. So like you look at a guy like Dahlbeck, and he was called up last year from the alternate training site, but he had already had 2018, you know, in Double A. He had made his way to Double A by that time. And then 2019, he played a lot of games at Double A, and then, you know, was at Triple A. So he had already played at Triple A. Duran has, you know, not played at Triple A in his limited time at Double A. He struggled.
Yeah.
Now there was debate.
Didn't he heat it up at the end, didn't he?
Yeah. So there was also though some debate of whether the numbers really reflected what he, you know, showed there, that he showed, you know, better potential than the numbers, but, you know, the numbers weren't there. And, but he's made so many changes since that point too. You know, he's added, you know, he's changed his swing up. He's become physically, you know, humongous. I mean, he's got muscles like bulging out of his body. Yes, exactly. I often have that comp when people ask me who I look like. I
say Grady Sizemore, Jacoby, Jaren Duran, and Chris Smith, the big four.
So I think that with him, they really want to see, you know, those swing adjustments and, you know, in his talent play at AAA first. And I also think that he still needs to make adjustments, you know, in the outfields, taking routes to baseballs. I haven't seen every game of spring training here because, you know, there's limited.
Can't watch through the radio.
Can't watch the radio, yeah, but I've heard
unbelievable.
That you struggle.
2021, we still have to listen to Rob Bradford instead of watching the actual games.
But I think that, you know, I've heard that his routes haven't been great. You know, some of them haven't been great, and or at least that's what I've read and stuff like that. And, you know, and he's a guy that was new to the position, though, obviously, when they drafted him. They drafted him as a second baseman. Now, his speed can obviously save a lot of, like, if he makes a bad decision on a route, he can, you know, make up for it with his speed and everything. But I think that they equally want to see him, you know, defensively as much as hitting in AAA. They want to see improvements. So, you know, I would, as you said, I would totally agree July, August for him.
And he's a guy just looking at it now. 352 plate appearances at AA, at 250 with a 634 OPS, and that's after 226 appearances at Salem that year, where he hit, you know, like 400 at 387. You know, 18 steals, 998 OPS, four homers, and just that's when he really broke out onto the scene. But again, only basically a half a year at Portland, and
a lot of adjustments though made too since then. You know. Yeah. And a lot of work.
I just, you know, my point is that Heim Bloom's not the type of guy that's going to rush. And, but with the way the outfield is, there's definitely a path there by the middle of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, too, you look at him and I mentioned this, if he can really get this defense down a lot, like when you bring up a prospect, you want, like, if they fail on the offensive side, you know, it's good that they're playing like really strong defense, you know, and like they have that and they feel like they're helping out in a way. And, you know, they are helping out in the team defensively. And, you know, there's one area that they feel good about. And so, you know, so that would be an important part, is getting the defense a little bit better, the routes a little bit better. But I feel like he's got the type of speed, the potential that I'm not going to compare him to, say, Jackie Bradley, but I think he could be an above average center fielder that could be a little bit better of a hitter than Jackie Bradley. So, you know, I look at him as, you know, there's debate on whether he'll be the center fielder of the future or if he is a fourth outfielder. I think the changes that he's made and the commitment that he's shown, I mean, you know, with how much he works out and how good he looks, I mean, not every player comes to spring training in the best shape of their life, even though everybody says they are in the best shape of their life. This guy's always in the best shape of his life. So he is a hard worker. And I think that shows you, that bodes well for the future.
So, you know, like I said, you do the minor league notebook every week. You're more in tune with this. You just caught up with Brian Abraham, who's the now the director of player development. He went to St. John's in Shrewsbury. I just tweeted, we can't hold that against him. So congratulations to him on the promotion, despite him going to a huge rival of Algonquin Regional that we like to beat back in the day, which is not that long ago. But with your prospect, how much attention you pay to the prospects, how would you rank the top five? I know it's kind of like structured right now where Casas is number one, Downs is number two, there's some debate once you get to that point. But who are your top five if you had to give them to me?
Yeah, so I would say Casas is number one. Mm-hmm. And did you say Downs too? Because I mean, you could throw in Dahlbeck as two. Do you want to include Dahlbeck or no?
Let's not.
Okay. So let's say Jeter Downs number two. I really like, you know, I really like him as a player. I think he has the potential to hit for, you know, both average and some extra base power. And, you know, from what I hear, he's a good defender, even though he's made some errors already in spring training. So, mm-hmm. I think he'll be a good second baseman. So I would put him too. I put, I'd put Duran probably fourth. I guess I'd have to put Mata third, just because, and the scary thing is with his injury, you know, like he could drop off really quick. But I guess right now, you know, his pure stuff, I mean, he's got a fastball in the upper 90s. He's got, you know, and, you know, he's got a fastball, a two seamer that really moves. And, you know, he's got some really elite secondary stuff. So he has the best stuff, the best potential. Now, potential always doesn't mm-hmm. always come because of injuries and stuff like that, but I would put him third. I put Duran fourth and, fifth, I'd throw a guy in there that's just, is like a surprise guy, like that. I think, you know, like guys like Thad Ward or, and I know that's surprising probably, Gilberto Jimenez is a guy that could obviously be the number five, but I look at a guy like Thad Ward mm-hmm. and a guy like Noah Song, and hopefully they'll get Noah Song back this year, but you know, Noah Song could be a legit major league pitcher. You know, just throwing, you know, 90 something, you know, high 90s fastballs and maintaining that throughout a game. So, you know, you look at it and there's a lot of potential with some of the the guys that are in that, you know, 5 to 10 range, and then even 10 ranked 10 to 30 organizationally, that they could make jumps. And so, yeah, I guess I go with Jimenez right now, fifth. There you go.
But so I asked because MLB Pipeline came out with theirs yesterday. Casas 1, Downs 2. We didn't include Dahlbeck and Houck because – or we didn't talk about Houck. We didn't include Dahlbeck because he's a major leaguer. But, hey, I have Dahlbeck 3rd, Duran 4, Mata 5, Jimenez 6, Houck 7, Jay Groom is 8, Nick York 9, and then Thaddeus Ward followed by Blaise Jordan, Ronaldo Hernandez, Matt Lugo, not a lot of people know, and then Song 14th. So I think that's just a product of where he is. I wanted to get to that because I feel like that's just been a huge storyline of – you know, not just your major league ready prospects where like, okay, Duran might show up this year, or, you know, Seabold or some of those guys that are advanced that we knew kind of were on the precipice. But, you know, York, the way he looked early on in camp at 18, almost 19, Jimenez, he's now up. He hit a double yesterday. How impressed are you by what you've been able to see from some of those younger guys and you know, even a guy like Thad Ward that you are much higher on than all the other lists?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, with a guy like York, I mean, he's a huge part, you know, they got him, and obviously drafting him, they feel like he would have been a first rounder. He would have been a surefire first rounder in the draft last year, projected by all the, you know, rankings and stuff, if they had had a full season and coronavirus hadn't stopped high school season. So I think that, you know, it's big that he has, you know, a good year. If he has a good year, the Red Sox can really rise in the standings. His prospect status will jump up to a top five prospect within the system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you also look at, you know, Jimenez. You know, I'm really impressed with it. You know, his speed is right there with Durant's, you know, and you know, he added some weight and everything during the coronavirus thing. He was one of the guys that really worked hard. There was a group of guys that really worked hard. Some of the international players, and you know, obviously Bizardo was one. But you know, you look at him, and then you know, obviously they have to draft an impactful player that could make the major leagues.
Yeah.
Quickly at number 4, and that's how you get your system back. And they're close. I mean, I look at this year as a year that they can really make a leap from, mm-hmm. you know, they've been 20th in the Baseball America rankings the past 2 years, but they've added a lot of guys, as I said before, you know, guys that are 11 to 30 prospects that could make the jump up into the top 10 organizationally, you know, some interesting guys like Noah Song, if he comes back this year, that's huge. Thad Ward is, you know, he added a cutter last year or 2 years ago, and you know, he's throwing really hard and he has this really good cutter, and he's not the same person that they drafted in seventh round overall. That 2018 draft looks pretty good. So I think that there's a lot of potential in the minor league system. They have to play and show it this year though too.
No, I agree. And when we talk about those rankings in Baseball America, and this is something Chaim Bloom said, but you know, a lot of the guys that they got back who are under control for many, many years are not prospects. So Verdugo, Pivetta, Franchi, obviously Verdugo is a class above those guys, but they don't count towards these prospect rankings when we're talking about, you know, minor league talent and all that stuff. And soon, you know, Dahlbeck will graduate off of this, and probably Houck will graduate off these lists as well. So we'll end with this because we've gone a little long, but we're 3 weeks away from opening day. In your mind, what are the three things that you are keeping an eye on the closest? Because I have mine, but I'll ask you first.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the final bullpen spot, our final couple of bullpen spots, especially as you said with Brazier not, you know, in there, I think that the outfield, as you talked about, you know, with Cordero not in the mix right now because, you know, he's been on the COVID-related injured list, even though it's really not his issue. That's, you know, going for it, that fourth outfielder spot, or that third and fourth outfielder spot. And, you know, the guy on the bench, you know, if it's going to be, you know, Christian Arroyo, if it's going to be Michael Chavis, if Danny Santana is going to be, so that spot on the bench, because they've talked about how they're going to use 14 pitches and 12 position players. Mm-hmm. And so that should be interesting. And, you know, also continue to look at, you know, the starting rotation, how some of these guys look. And you know, I really want to look at, you know, how some of the depth starters that are going to be at the alternate training site will look too, like, you know, Seabold stuff as they continue on. So, but, you know, obviously you want to see Richards get, you know, his control and his mechanics and everything back and, you know, look, you know, feeling good going into opening day. And as I said, this rotation could be pretty good.
I think an underrated thing that you wrote about this morning when you just grabbed the lineup, but Kike Hernandez leading off and Alex Verdugo batting second. I don't think a lot of people realize that that has a good chance of happening instead of Verdugo being the leadoff guy. So that'll be something to monitor. It seems like Cora really loves that. And, you know, I think just making sure that all the key players enter the year healthy. You know, so far, I know, you know, Bogarts has his minor thing. Mata's serious, but a little bit farther away from, he wasn't going to make the opening day roster anyway, but, you know, we just saw what happened to the Yankees yesterday. Was Zach Britton's going to miss a month or two. So keeping everybody healthy is a super important thing, especially coming off the year everybody just had last year and kind of the wonkiness of it. And in that regard, so far, so good. I think, you know, one thing that people are starting to get on the Red Sox a little bit about, but Cora's focus is so much on, we need to clean up, we need to play better defense, we need to avoid the errors. And so far, you know, they've led the league in errors and they played sloppy and, you know, they got blown out again yesterday. So when it's, you know, more innings of major leaguers, that stuff can't happen, or it doesn't pretend well for the start of the year. So that's my stuff. You know, nothing major. I feel like there are some intriguing things before April 1st when, if all goes well and the Red Sox are allowing, you know, a relatively full press box, I'll get to see Chris Smith for the first time in over a year. So what a treat that'll be.
Awesome. I can't wait.
So that's Chris Smith. I'm Chris Cotillo. That's the Fenway Rundown. We'll be with you probably in a couple of weeks, see if we can get a couple more players on here and give Chris Smith a break from having to come on.